I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi folks, and welcome to a new episode of Digital Spy's Soap Scoop, a weekly podcast where we sit down with some of our favourite people from the world of soaps and talk through the biggest spoilers from Coronation Street, Emmerdale, Hollyoaks and EastEnders. I'm your host, Ali, and as always, I'm joined by Sophie.
Hi!
How are you doing this morning, Sophie?
I am good, thanks. Do you know what? I'm feeling festive.
Oh,
I know
good.
It's November. I know it's November, but I put my tree up, I've got the lights on, it's all happening because it's been one of those years, and I feel like we just all need a bit of joy, don't we?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Me and my partner have just ordered our Christmas tree because we've just moved into a new flat, and we were like, yeah, let's just go for it this weekend, even though it's kind of barely December. Because I fancy just like, end life. I really feel like I want to end the year. And I think Christmas is a good way to do that. So yeah, bring on the mince pies and the tinsel.
Definitely, definitely. I used to frown upon people who started too early, but this year I'm all for it. So go wild.
I definitely feel like I've seen a few on my like daily walks. I've definitely seen more kind of early Christmas decorations than I ever have before as well. I think a lot of people are just kind of saying, screw it, yeah, let's just get into the swing.
Yeah, definitely. My Instagram feed the other day, it was everywhere. Everyone had decorations up. So yes, I very much recommend it if you haven't already.
Mm. And the other thing that Christmas brings is kind of the big Christmas soap storylines, which we're going to start talking about when we get to the spoiler section, I think. But one of the big storylines coming up at the end of this year is the Jai and Laurel pregnancy story in Emmerdale. And we were lucky enough this week to sit down with Chris Bisson and talk to him about what that storyline meant to him and kind of some of the challenges that came with tackling it. So it's a really interesting interview. It's one of our kind of more challenging storylines that we've talked about, so go in kind of knowing that, but yeah, it was really good to talk to Chris.
Yeah, really interesting, very thought-provoking, but like Ali said, maybe not the easiest listen, so yeah, go in prepared, but I recommend giving it a listen because he had a lot to say on it.
Yeah, and I think there's been a lot of conversation around the storyline online and offline and from lots of different people, and it was quite good to kind of hear from him his thoughts on those issues and what the storyline was doing and how it was being as sensitive as possible to lots of things.
Yeah, definitely. He's very clued up. He'd done a lot of research, they've worked with lots of charities. So yeah, he's very knowledgeable.
Definitely. So without further ado, we will hand you over to an earlier version of us.
Enjoy. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's good to talk.
So, Jai and Laurel, Chris, have this incredibly tough storyline coming up to do with the termination of a pregnancy. And we just want to know, obviously, it's super sensitive. Can you tell us a little bit about the charities and organisations that Emmerdale has been working with around
yeah,
this?
Yeah, well, lots of charities and organisations, predominantly for production in the research period. They were working with the charity ARC, and they provided a lot of information and statistics and stories to them. Obviously, the individuals who were involved in the story, so the writer will have her own people that she engages with, certainly from the producer's perspective and the artist's perspective. You know, the case studies become sort of one of the bits that we really focus on. And then obviously there's personal experience as well. So I kind of break research down into two areas, really. There's kind of the headline research that goes on, which is the reason that ITV or Emmerdale want to play the story. And then there's a level of research when it filters down to me. You know, my research is much more in depth and character driven. You know, it's where the case studies become really, really important to the way that we play the story on screen, the way that the characters think and what place we need to be at in our heads. And then obviously there's the real life side. You know, actors, writers were all affected by personal experience. And, you know, I'm no different. It's a difficult story for me. I'll be quite straight about that for you. I have a cousin who has Down's syndrome. And he has been the centre of our family. I spent many years, formative years, growing up with him and looking after him and playing with him. And, you know, it's difficult for me. I've had to have difficult conversations with both charities and with family as well. You know, I had to speak to my auntie because my cousin is a massive Emmerdale fan. And, you know, I wanted her to know that this story was coming. And I also wanted to work out, you know, if he would be watching it and whether he would process the information in the way that it's or he would interpret the information in the way that that we play it, and whether he would be able to make sense of that, whether it would be upsetting for him. And you just have to be upfront about these things. You know, I had to speak to, well, I didn't have to speak to, but out of courtesy, I spoke to my local Down's syndrome support group, who I've worked with in the past, and who I was working with at Pride and Manchester Awards, and then after that. So, you know, these are very difficult conversations, and I think the best thing to do is just to be upfront with people about why this story is being played and the reasons that it's important to maybe shine a light on something that isn't discussed in day-to-day life. And the reason, as you will see when you watch the episodes, is heartbreaking. You know, people don't feel like they can discuss it because they feel ashamed of themselves. And it's never a very straightforward thing to deal with, and people agonise over it. And certainly, I think I alluded to the conversations I had with the case study, the male case study, were absolutely heartbreaking. And it's not easy because people can be on different pages about things. Jay and Laurel aren't on the same page when they get the diagnosis, that's for sure. And they eventually, I suppose, when Jay and Laurel speak about it, she said, I won't spoil the episodes, but she says some compelling things which bring Jay, I suppose, on board. In making the decision that they make, although that is that's a real struggle for Jay.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of obviously the best way to tackle this sort of thing, and it's such a, you know, a big sensitive topic, and you kind of want to have the input from all the right people at the right levels. It must be quite a daunting thing, kind of being kind of handed this kind of script or these kind of stories. Were you kind of, what was your experience like? How did you first hear about the storyline? Were you and Charlotte both called in for a meeting? Kind of, how did that come about? How was that kind of given to you?
Yes, so the executive producer, Jane Hudson, requested a meeting with me, and she wanted to talk about the new story. So she explained what they were thinking and why they were thinking about doing it, and just wanted to sound me out, see what my opinion was on it. And I'm sure that the same happened with Charlotte. So we just had a conversation about it, and obviously we knew it was a sensitive subject from the get-go. But given the research that had been massed, and the writer had obviously researched this story before they'd pitched it to the production in the first place. And then Jane was able to fill me in with some of the background information as to why they thought it was an important story, and that there were a lot of people who were struggling through the circumstances that they wanted to portray.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's one of those topics, but like Ali said, that has really divided opinions online, as these things often do. We want to talk a little bit about what we're actually going to see on screen, but can you talk us through how Jay feels about the decision he and Laurel have to make and how his feelings differ from hers? Because I think there's a little bit of a difference, isn't there?
Firstly, we go back to the beginning of the story. The pregnancy comes as a massive shock. They're both in their mid to late 40s, and it took a bit of time for them to get their heads around the fact that they were having a baby. And then there was all this... There were some uncomfortable moments where they were sounding each other out because they wanted to know if the other person was happy about the fact that they were expecting a baby. And then it comes out that, you know, they are both really happy about it. I think for Jay particularly, his journey in Emmerdale has been, a lot of it has been about babies. And that's what's, a lot of his storylines have been about babies and his desperate desire to have them. It started with Charity and she didn't want to have a baby. And then he got the cleaner pregnant and had a baby. We also found out that he had another baby, which his best friend Declan thought was his daughter, yeah. Mia. It turns out to be Jay's daughter, Mia. Yeah. He's always had issues with being, with always wanting children, and he has always always wanted to be a good father, and I think that's what's really motivated him. He wants to be a dad and he wants to do it well.
So why do they, or can you talk us through why they ultimately make the decision that they do?
Well, it's a long and winding road, and it's a very difficult decision. It starts with elation at the fact that Laurel's pregnant, and then they get to the scan where they're told that there may be some extra fluid around the baby's neck, and that could be a sign of some sort of chromosomal complication. And they decide to pursue and go for the CVS test, which is offered to them, because Laurel's particularly concerned about her age and the way it'll affect the family, and she needs to know. And I think Jay's on board with that decision, because it's a difficult decision to make to even have the test in the first place, because I suppose in most people's minds is you've got to be prepared for what you would ultimately do with the information that it might give you. And you can either go into that test prepared or unprepared. And, I know from personal experience that it's difficult to make that decision about whether you have the test or not. There are so many conflicting things in your mind as to, you know, how it could affect the baby. Obviously, you can lose the baby. There's a very small chance. And then also your preparation for the results of that test, which is something... Which is extremely difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting here as well is that the father's perspective in a story like this can often be overlooked. So was it important to you that Jay's journey had some prominence as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm here for the dads. because men do get sidelined and they do get overlooked in these processes. And, you know, this story, I suppose, you know, it's... The story centres around Laurel at this stage because she's the one carrying the baby, and ultimately she's the one that's going to have to make the decision. And I was keen in my conversations with the producer that really we voiced some of the concerns, or not necessarily not always the concerns, but some of the things that men think and feel. There was one line that we added in, which was, you'll have to watch it, but Jay's contemplating that, you know, ultimately he's going to have to live with whatever Laurel decides. You know, as much as people say it's a joint decision, you know, there is a little bit it's only a joint decision if you're both on the same page.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I think that's the thing. And there's so many, like you say, there's so many different... It's so important to bring in lots of different kind of perspectives from within the kind of storyline, because people kind of like are bringing their own thought processes and their own kind of internal struggles to this, a decision like this, and getting outside perspectives can be really kind of important and shine light on things in a different way. To that end, do you think kind of how important was it to have Rona and Marlon play a role in this story or have their perspective in this story, given that obviously they have kind of a very happy family with Leo?
Yeah, Marlon and Rona and Leo, most importantly, are absolutely crucial to this story. And I think, firstly, we should kind of acknowledge that, that Emmerdale played the story of Rona and Marlon having baby Leo, and that has been a really successful storyline for nearly a decade on screen now. And the fact that Leo is in the show influences the other characters in the show. And so Marlon and Rona, and Jay doesn't actually speak to Marlon or Rona, but there is, but Laurel is the one that speaks to Rona. And you know, that they are some really, really powerful scenes. You know, I've watched all of the episodes as we're preparing for press conferences and to speak to you today. Obviously, I need to have seen these episodes because this isn't like any other storyline. You know, we have to understand the sensitivities around it. And there is a five-hander episode, which only features Jay and Laurel, Leo, Rona, and Marlon. And that episode, you know, the balance of that episode is that it's critical to see the other side of this story. And for Laurel and for Jay, and for the audience to see the real positive effect that Leo has had on Rona and Marlon, and has had an effect, and a positive effect he's had on the village.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I alluded to this just now, but this story has obviously caused some discussion and controversy online. I think it's inevitable with topics like this. But was this something that the show was prepared for before they made the story announcement?
Oh, absolutely prepared for it. Yes, we understood the sensitivities from the very outset. And, you know, it's important that we've considered that before we start speaking to the press, and also in the announcement, just that the story exists. It's always one thing preparing for it, but then it's another thing when people have personal stories that are really impassioned and that play counter to the story that you are portraying. And it's also really difficult when people haven't seen the story for them to make a judgment on how it's been portrayed. Now, you know, I understand that if the people of the pro-life perspective, they don't need to see this story in order to know that they disagree with it, because they know what the outcome will be. But I suppose just as we acknowledge and respect their perspective, I think it's fair to say that they also need to acknowledge that there is an alternative perspective. And it's not for me to judge as an actor on what is right or wrong. I'm just playing a story. And the fact that some people don't agree with it, I don't think it should preclude the show from playing the story. I mean, you know, it's almost a defense of the arts. And where would we be if we didn't have stories that were controversial or that tackled issues which are contemporary and real? And you know, there are a lot of people that go through this decision-making process and come out with different views every year in the UK. And, you know, that was one of the things from the very start that Jane Hudson was talking about, was that, you know, we had, or the writer had a very personal connection to it, the production team did, and they understood the real difficulties that that people were having in trying to come to terms with a diagnosis like this.
Yeah, I think that kind of relatability is so, and we spoke about it before on this show, is so key to what makes soap special and so key to what makes a programme that kind of is in the homes of people every day or and every week, you know, bringing these kind of storylines that people do deal with every year, you know, holding a mirror up to that and having those conversations in a way that people can kind of relate to is such an important part of what makes a soap kind of special.
Well, I think it is important. And the fact that we're having this conversation and this conversation is opened up for debate now means that people on both sides of the argument can have their say. And maybe they understand each other a little better. But having, you know, really delved down into this story and tried to understand what drives this character to make this decision, it's become clear to me that, you know, these decisions are only in the place of the people that have to make them, because there are unique and specific circumstances which will affect everybody's decision at that moment in time. And it's not for anybody else to judge them, because you need to walk a mile in their shoes before you do. And it's, you know, I did a lot of research for this part, and we had some case studies as well. And, you know, the conversations with the case study were some of the most heartbreaking conversations that I've ever had to have when researching a storyline. And it was very important to me that to play those kind of truthfully, honestly, and to try and extract, I mean, it's very unpleasant, but to try and extract some of the hurt and pain and try to make the audience understand how that character feels, you know, and that's based in reality.
On that topic of channeling that kind of those emotions. On a production side of things, I think me and Sophie were both interested to kind of hear what it was like to film these kind of intensely emotional scenes whilst you're, obviously we're all still social distancing and those rules are in place during filming and we're not seeing characters comfort each other in the way that we would normally do. Has that been kind of particularly challenging during this storyline?
Yes, it has. it's challenging all the time, to be honest with you, because human beings are incredibly tactile and, you know, you want to throw your arms around those that you love. And Jay and Laurel are no different, but we're all having to work at 2 meter distancing. You know, there's some camera trickery to make us look like we're closer together. We have lots of restrictions in the studio. You know, we have lines of control that the cameras can't cross. So technically, there are things that you probably don't notice, but things like eyelines and how polished the show looks, let's put it like that. You know, we have to compromise on some of those aspects as well. And then also we do need to see characters a little bit closer together than the 2 meters. And we have ways of getting around that. We spend a lot of time doing something which they call plate shots, which is, bore you with the technicalities, but basically you sit one character on a bench and you put the other character 2 meters away. You film one character on their own, then you swap over, you put the character that you haven't filmed on the other side of the bench and the other actor 2 meters away, and then in the edit you chop them together like editing a photo together. So you just edit the videos together basically so that it looks like they're sat next to each other. Sometimes it works better than others, you know. Sometimes the timings, when you watch it back, you know, the timing's a little different. So I say something to Charlotte and she doesn't quite react at the same moment that she did, or, you know, the same happens the opposite way around. And obviously they play with these things in the edit, but there's only so much you can do. You know, you can't,
of course,
you can't replicate a performance exactly the same time after time.
No, I find it also fascinating, all the camera trickery in the current climate. It's just amazing. So staying on like a social distancing note, the storylines, I believe, mention Arthur at some stage. So are the younger cast starting to return to set now, like following the COVID restrictions?
Yes. Some of the older of the younger cast, if you see what I mean.
Okay.
And also some of the older cast who weren't coming into work are now back coming to work. But we did start to ease things off, obviously, as the restrictions ease. You know, what we do at work kind of reflects where the country's up to generally. So the kids were scheduled to come back, and then it's like, oh no, we're going back into lockdown. Maybe we should kind of reduce those numbers. And one of the main things for us at Emmerdale is reducing the amount of people that are actually on the set and in the studio and the amount of people that you come into contact with. And that's, you know what, that's really hard for us on a personal level as well, because there are actors on Emmerdale, and I watched these episodes back to prepare for talking to you and others. And there's a whole new world in Emmerdale that I have not seen. You know, there are other actors and other characters doing different things. And I have no idea what they are up to. And I don't even see them at work. You know, you normally kind of, if you're in a busy storyline, you know, you might not have read every single scene of every single character in the episodes. You know, you're focused on the material that you're working on. You normally kind of get a feel for the show when you're doing scenes in the Woolpack and you're bumping into other characters and you say, oh yeah, what's going on with that murder, or what's going on with that affair, or, you know, how does that play out? Is there another baby? Whatever the storyline might be. And you kind of pick up all that chatter and, you know, you get a feel for how the show is. But now we don't even see each other. You go in and you're allocated your own dressing room, and you don't come into contact really with anyone other than the actor or actors that you're working with, unless you catch someone who's just leaving the building. So it's a different world that we work in.
Yeah, so many people have said that when we've spoken to them about social distancing. So they said that one of the hardest things is just not seeing half the cast anymore, because they're in like different bubbles and different sets and stuff like that. It's all very strange, but very 2020.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Speaking of 2020, and to pivot slightly as we move towards the kind of end of our time with you, I'd love to know, obviously, within the confines of what you can tell us about Jay's kind of Christmas plans. We know Jane Hudson's mentioned a big surprise for Emmerdale at Christmas, and we're just kind of, what can you tell us about what Christmas holds for Jay, and what can you tell us about what 2021 might hold for the character as well?
I don't know what I can tell. You know, you're always trying to put me on the spot and get something out of me, aren't you? I suppose the most I can say is the big surprise is not Jay's big surprise. Jay and Laurel are not in a particularly good place moving through Christmas and into the new year. The ramifications of the story that we're playing currently, it's not over and done with. You know, the decision that they come to is only really the first part of this story, and the consequences play out for Jay and for Laurel for quite some time. I mean, quite how long they play out for, I haven't seen. But, you know, I know that Jay struggles with the decision that they've made.
Of course.
Yeah, you kind of just touched on this. But to wrap things up, Jay and Laurel, do you think that their relationship has legs? Do you think they have a long-term future?
Yes, I think... I think they do. I know that having spoken to the powers that be in our building, they didn't want this to break Jay and Laurel up. You know, this could quite easily blow a couple apart, what happens in this story. And it does, you know, up and down the country every year. But, you know, a lot of couples will survive and some won't. And they wanted to be Jay and Laurel to be a couple that did survive this. And hopefully they'll have some happier storylines next year.
Yeah, definitely. Fingers crossed for sure about that one.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. We are about to wrap up now, but it's been great to speak to you and really insightful to hear your thoughts and to hear a bit more about the storyline.
I think we've covered a lot, and you know, I could talk for hours and hours about this, but I think mainly in conclusion that I would just encourage people to watch the episodes before forming an opinion. I mean, I found them difficult to watch back, and I found them difficult to play, and it's a heartbreaking decision. The episodes, I think, are incredibly well balanced and tell both sides of this story. And I just encourage people to watch the episodes first. I mean, they're definitely worth an appointment to view.
Definitely. And like we've said already, like Ali said, soaps are about holding a mirror up to society. And I think this is something that people go through very silently. It can be very lonely. And I think, like you say, it shows both sides. On that note, we will wrap up this chat. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great day.
Yeah, thank you, Chris.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So there you go. That was our chat with Chris Besson. We hope you enjoyed it and found it kind of informative and useful. I think it was really good to have that conversation with him before the Jai and Laurel storyline starts to air, which we're going to talk about now a little bit. So this is the part of the podcast where we dig into the biggest spoilers for Emmerdale, Coronation Street, Hollyoaks and EastEnders. This week, we're talking about episodes that are going to air from the 30th of November to the 4th of December and from Monday to Friday. And yeah, I think we should kick off with Emmerdale after kind of chatting with Chris.
Yeah, I mean, Chris covered it mostly, didn't he? And I think it's difficult to know how you're going to feel.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's worth giving Emmerdale the benefit of the doubt and seeing how you feel after those episodes air. So that storyline kicks off this week, and will kind of eventually it culminates in kind of a one big single storyline episode. But yeah, the groundwork of that is going to be laid over the next few episodes.
And then it will carry on over the coming weeks. I think Chris was saying it's still being played out through Christmas and beyond. And it's going to be really testing for them. It's going to test their relationship. It's going to test their relationship with other people. But yeah, I think Emmerdale, you know, kudos for them.
100%.
For covering something that they know will be controversial, but important nonetheless.
And then the other things we want to talk about for Emmerdale this week. So first of all, it's kind of more bad news for Moira and Kane. So this week we're going to kind of, you know, get to grips with the fact that they're not really back on track after their kind of rocky reunion. And the episodes that are coming up this week will kind of work out whether they can move on, whether their relationship kind of has a future.
Yeah, so I didn't see this coming, to be honest, because they had their lovely reunion episode last week. You know, it was all very romantic. The sun was setting. But by the time next week arrives, they're still not properly back on track. Moira is desperate to get them back on track. She arranges a lunch for Kane's birthday, but he's not particularly interested. And he's quite rude, quite abrupt. And it just doesn't look like things are particularly rosy in Koira land.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I think, like you said, like the reunion, maybe the reunion was kind of that those moments were a bit more of like a short-term solution to a bigger problem, I think is the case. Because like you say, there's going to be a few moments next week when she tries to kind of, she's desperate to get things back on track and really kind of smooth things over. And he's going to kind of rebuff her and things are not going to work out to plan. And then, towards the end of the week, they're going to have kind of one last attempt at a big kind of romantic evening. And I think that's when Moira's going to kind of figure out that things aren't, something bigger than their relationship is wrong with Kane at the moment. And she kind of is going to urge him to come clean about what's really bothering him.
Yeah. So she asks him outright what's going on, what his problem is, but is left stunned. Yes. He drops a bombshell. So we're left to wonder whether they can really fix things after all.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see, sometimes. I suppose. Yeah.
Hopefully they can, but who knows?
Yeah, it's a funny one. Well, it's a time of year for everyone to kind of air their dirty laundry. So we'll see We'll see what shakes out. Speaking of dirty laundry, the other rocky situation in Emmerdale this week is going to be kind of the ongoing impacts of Paul's gambling and how that's kind of impacting various people, the Dingles and outside the Dingle family as well.
Yeah, this is very interesting because it's showing, like you say, the impact it's having not only on his life, but those around him. And it's going to reach other characters in the village. Liv is the one to get heavily involved next week. And this is all quite shocking, isn't it, really?
Yeah, so I think the things we've seen, the way they've set it up, obviously, is that Vinny knows that Paul's gambling again. He doesn't want to be around his mum and dad. So we've seen him kind of move in with Liv and Aaron for various, you know, how well that's going, who will know. But yeah, so Vinny's moved out. Obviously, Mandy's like quite upset about that. It's Christmas. She wants family to be together. So she kind of goes to see Vinny, see if she can smooth things over. He's not happy. He wants to avoid her and Paul. And then while they're kind of trying to fix their relationship, we're going to see Paul kind of try and get Liv on his side, because obviously Liv knows the reason that Vinny's moved out. Liv knows that Paul's gambling again. And so we're going to have some kind of tense scenes with them. I think Liv's going to kind of realise that, you know, Paul's attempts to get her on his side are really more of a threat than anything else.
Definitely.
And then, like you said, it's going to end up with, it looks like Liv's going to have a seizure, which is obviously quite serious. And then as that kind of happens, that's going to give Paul potentially the leverage to kind of say to her, well, I'll keep this a secret if you keep my secret.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of left with this question of whether they can reach a deal over their respective secrets. But the secrets are very different. We're talking about health. Yeah. Like Liv's seizure is obviously very life-threatening. And Paul's secret, you know, it's obviously gambling. It's mental health related, but it's, you know, he's lying to a lot of people, causing a lot of problems. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see really. But it is definitely having an impact on everyone he's coming into contact with.
Yeah, it's funny. It is that thing. I mean, I keep thinking about when we spoke to Lisa Riley all those weeks ago, and she said, you know, from Mandy's point of view, she wears a heart on her sleeve. She trusts everyone too much. And like, we're still seeing that. Like, what will it take from Paul's side of things? When will she finally twig that everything is not as it seems?
I know. Probably around Christmas, if I was betting that. But
yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah, we'll see.
Right, so sticking with ITV, we'll take a jump up to Manchester and have a look at the big Coronation Street spoilers of the week.
Yeah, all happening
happening, yeah. The two big storylines that kind of we've all been following all year are really coming up now. So we've got, firstly, we've got Yasmin's trial and kind of the fallout there.
Yes, so that is going to play out across the week. You know, it's the moment we've kind of all been waiting for. She's been in prison for all these months. It's all very unjust, all very unfair. And this is a chance to hopefully get her out, get her back home. But there is, unsurprisingly, somewhat, some drama before the trial even starts, as Tim and Jeff have a fight. Jim winds Tim up, makes some very nasty comments. And Tim ends up punching him, which is not ideal.
Yeah, but also you can't really blame him. I think it's that thing of last week, it was like Jeff's big problem was that, oh, you know, Tim's going to testify and that's not, does not look good for me. But yeah, like you say, Jeff being Jeff, goads Tim into punching him and then like takes a photo and makes it basically so that because of that kind of assault, Tim, there's no way that Tim could possibly testify against him.
Yes, he's no longer a credible witness, which is problematic because, you know, that was a glimmer of hope for Yasmin. However, there is still time to turn things around because Elaine's whereabouts are finally revealed. So she's been missing for a number of months. She came onto the cobbles and threatened to expose Jeff's history of abusive behaviour, because obviously if she stands up in court and tells everyone that he also abused her during their relationship, then Yasmin is more likely to be believed. But she mysteriously vanished, almost into thin air.
Yeah, so we're going to find out that it looks like after she had a pretty nasty run-in with Jeff, where he kind of threatened her and kind of intimidated her, and to the extent that she was admitted to a psychiatric hospital, which is where she's been during this time, because she's so shaken up. And so, yeah, Tim's going to go to her, try and kind of heal that wound, say to her, like, you know, I'm sorry I didn't believe you, but you're kind of the key to helping this woman. And it's all about, you know, whether she's able to do it, whether she'll testify.
Yeah, definitely. I think the other problem is that Elaine confides in Tim that she's very scared, even if she was well enough to testify, because she believes that Jeff has been spying on her in hospital, which is just appalling.
And totally believable, right? Like, if anyone's going to have been, you know, spying on her, it's going to be him.
100%. So we're left with the cliffhanger of whether Elaine is going to testify or not, because she really is Yasmin's, well, one of Yasmin's only hopes, because as you'll see further down the trial as it starts, Sally's own testament is sort of thrown out of court because they just think it's all hearsay, whereas Elaine obviously has actual evidence that he is a very, very abusive, dangerous man.
So yeah, we'll see how it all shakes out, but it's exciting to be getting to this kind of point in the storyline. We're at the trial, which is always kind of where we've been leading, and yeah, exciting.
Yeah. We're going to see Yasmin testify as well. She bravely recalls Jeff's coercive and cruel behaviour in court. She tells them very calmly what happened on the night of the bottle incident. But yes, it's a tense wait to see whether justice will prevail.
Yeah, and it's worth saying, like, Yasmin as a character has been such a journey this whole year, and this moment for her is a however it shakes out is a huge moment. The kind of bravery that she shows here in standing up and saying what happened. Really impressive. Yeah.
It's been such
performance as well.
Yeah, it's been such a powerful, impactful storyline. I was actually on a Zoom call the other day with Ian, who plays Jeff. He's a lovely man in real life, you'll be pleased to know. And he has been working with Women's Aid to release a single for the charity. He's that passionate about it, which is just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Really lovely. And then finally for Coronation Street, the other big kind of ongoing storyline is Ray's plan to, you know, bulldoze the cobbles and build a skyscraper. And that's going to be exposed, it looks like, this week, which is very exciting.
I've got the skyscraper song in my head now. Demi Lovato. Yeah, so from one villain to another, we are going to be seeing Ray's plan unravel a little bit, I think, as more and more people find out what he's up to and sort of come together to be like, this isn't happening. But it's a case of whether they can gatecrash Ray's big press launch in time or not.
Yeah, so it's that thing of like you said, but leading up to this moment, most people in on the street are kind of like oblivious to what's going on. But then this week is a bit of a domino effect. You know, Sally is selling. Abby kind of gets suspicious. She sees some things. She talks to Craig. Mm. He kind of says, oh, I found this documents, and all the pieces come together. Sally gets kind of speaks to the council. They say this planning application has been put through, and it all kind of builds and builds, and the street kind of comes together, which we love to see. But yeah, like the question is, can they do anything against it? And the other question is does Ray have all the pieces he needs to kind of to pull this off? So the two big question marks hanging over it are, you know, can he get the factory? People on the street don't know what the deal is there. And also, Abby's got some plans with the brewery and whether she can kind of make it a historical landmark. And so, yeah, the street is rallying to kind of stop him, which is definitely going to make some good telly.
Yeah, it's a real meeting of minds. They all sort of come together and they, as a team, they want to put a stop to it. But yeah, it's a case of whether they can. And Ray responds by making them an offer, which leaves Sally, Dev, Brian, Roy, people like that, with a lot to discuss. And like you say, Abby trusts the wrong person in Debbie, who we know is Ray's sidekick. So it's, you know, it's a real, it's a complicated one, but we shall see. I have a feeling it'll all work out, but you know.
You never know, but yeah, I expect so too. Speaking of complicated interlocking storylines, let's move on to EastEnders. There's only one thing we can really talk about with EastEnders, and that is the whodunit, that sofa you call from a mile away.
I know.
Is coming to us this Friday. We're going to have a week of Ian making even more enemies before someone takes revenge on Friday.
Yep, Friday the 4th of December. Just call me Psychic Sophie. I've had the feeling this is coming for months, but yes. So next week's episodes, we'll see Ian's story dominate pretty much throughout the week. Even all the other stories going along inside it are still tied in with that because he literally, I think he pretty much falls out with every person on the square, which is impressive, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, so the thing that's going to happen is that on Friday, Ian's going to be attacked, right? And then as we're trying to work out, okay, like, who are the suspects, I made a list, and the list is like, it's Max, because of the money situation. It's Kathy because of the money situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tina, I think, again, because of the pub.
Yes.
Peter, because he's been cut out of the will. And he's going to keep making enemies. So he's already kind of annoying Suki, Linda, yep. The Mitchells, even Shirley's not going to be happy. It's everyone is out to get him.
Yeah, and there's a couple more twists and turns that haven't been revealed that are going to be surprises in the episode that you're going to be left thinking, oh, could it be that person? Could it be that person? You know, as I am Psychic Sophie, an early prediction of mine is that it could be Sharon. So I was talking to my sister-in-law, Kelly, who listens to this. So hi, Kelly, about this. And I said to her, I just think it could be, like, obviously, if we go back to February, Ian, you know, we've still got this ticking time bomb.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah, of the fact that Ian was partially responsible for Dennis's death, and that's all gone very quiet. But obviously, I don't actually know anything. This is just me speaking out loud. But there are multiple people it could be. He also spots Max and Linda kissing, which, you know, isn't ideal. He falls out, like you said, with Tina, with Kathy, with Bobby. There's Dottie. There's past beef there. You know, there's just the list, like you say, is endless.
Yeah, it's funny because you think about, like, I was going through, like, who I think it really, like, that's the long list, but, like, the realistic, like, I don't think, I'd be very surprised if it was Kathy, right? I'd be very surprised if it was Tina, because it's not really what her character is, kind of, like, it's not really the vibe. I think the Mitchells are an obvious answer. Maybe too obvious. So it's lots of, like, you start to do the calculations in your head of, like, oh, it could be this person, could be this person. And like I say, we've got some stuff coming up this week with Max and Linda. And also with Tiffany as well.
Oh yeah, of course. There's a Rainey, Stuart, Tiffany saga because Ian puts a spanner in the works there by letting Whitney know what Tiffany is planning. So there, you know, honestly, it literally could be anyone. I think you know, it's wide open right now, and that's whodunits we love, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's the big thing for EastEnders. So we'll keep watching and keep us in the loop. And also, if you're watching and you're guessing, let us know. And let us know who you think is going to do it, because I want to know your theories.
Yeah, there's something really satisfying about being right about someone you called really early on.
Yeah, definitely. Right, and then finally, we'll move on to Hollyoaks.
Yep, absolutely. So we have the big story next week is the ongoing McQueen blackmail plot. We've talked about it loads, honestly, but I think next week things really do step up a gear. Silas is, well, we know he's around, but he really is around next week.
Yeah.
He targets Cher, whose own secret about killing her sister comes out. So at the start of the week, we'll see Silver really desperately try and keep that under wraps, but, you know, nothing can stay under wraps, especially when there's like a creepy doll hanging around. So that comes out. She goes on a bit of a bender. She's very upset. And Silas finds her, comes face to face with her, and then sends a picture of her in this very drunken, fragile state to Mercedes, who then realises that Silas is around, goes off to find him. Well, she's really, like, had enough, hasn't she, Mercedes,
at
this point?
She's kind of been, she's umming and ahhing about what to do, and then this is the last straw, I think, that pushes her over the edge to be like, okay, someone needs to act. But this is happening right now. Like, if we don't intervene, who knows what will happen? So, yeah, she goes to find them.
Yeah, and it's funny, you just said pushes her over the edge. I think that is literally what might happen. If you've watched the Hollyoaks trailer, it's looking like she's going to fall back off an edge. And obviously we know she's pregnant. She announced that during the anniversary episode back in October. So yeah, that's very worrying. We'll have to see what happens there.
Yeah, it's another step in this the blackmail storyline. It's so interesting. I think it's funny because it's almost been like someone described it to me as almost like a trivia test. Like if you can follow it and you can remember why they're all being kind of blackmailed, it's kind of like a little Hollyoaks history test.
Yeah, it's like a little game, isn't it? Yeah. Like, oh, can you remember what that person did? Oh, yeah, she killed someone about 10 years ago. Is that, yeah. But yeah, no, I'm quite enjoying it. And then finally, the second big story of the week is also partially McQueen related, as Joel is going to be getting a little bit too cozy with Teresa.
Yeah, it's the show's going to kind of revisit a bit of their history.
Yeah,
obviously she's been gone for a while, but she's just come back. And Joel and Goldie are kind of like, he's made a new life with Goldie, but there's kind of it seems like he still has feelings for Teresa, and it feels like he still definitely has feelings for Cleo.
Yeah.
That's the other kind of this in this love quad in this love square rather than love triangle.
I know, with three McQueens. I mean, yeah. couldn't really get any more complicated, could it? But yeah, it's looking like he is going to have some little interaction with Teresa that's going to be leaving him feeling very guilty. I don't quite know what happens, but like we say, secrets don't stay secret in Hollyoaks.
And no, definitely not. Especially not at the moment.
So with the doll, yeah, exactly. So I don't think it'll be long until that gets back to Goldie's, who's going to be very devastated.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see the exact details of that one. But yeah, it's going to be a messy couple of weeks for Joel, I think.
Definitely.
And that's all we've got time for in terms of spoilers. Let us know which storylines you're really enjoying, which ones you think need a bit of a tweak or a change, anything that you kind of are excited to see pan out over the next few months, because it's all happening. So we're kind of, we're all waiting with bated breath to see how various things, various whodunits play out.
Yes, and let us know who you think attacks Ian.
I want to know your theories. And you can let us know your theories on Twitter and Facebook. So on Facebook, we're facebook.com/digitalspysoaps. On Twitter, we're @SoapScoop. And you can read more about all of the spoilers that we just talked about over on digitalspy.com/soaps.
Yep. And you know the rest of the drill. Leave us a review, leave us 5 stars, subscribe, and then you'll get the very final episode as it lands at 8 a.m. on Friday. And we will see you next week. Have a great few days. Stay safe. Stay warm. Keep watching Christmas films. Put up your Christmas tree.
Definitely. All right, folks. We shall see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.